Good evening. Welcome to the October 11th, 2011 Morro Bay City Council meeting. Apologies to those of you at home for our late start. Let the record reflect that we all members of council are present, and we'll begin with a moment of silence. And if you would please rise and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Mr. Joe Woods.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Another fabulous Harbor Festival. Hope everybody came down. The weather was super, and it was great crowds and no trouble, right, Chief? Got no problems. So congratulations to the Harbor Festival and all the volunteers. Thanks to all the volunteers for the help. And I'm sure everybody knows that starting tomorrow, weather permitting, the Fish and Game, Coast Guard, Geodetic Survey, I'm sure I mispronounced that, are starting a survey in the Montebello off of Cambria to check on the fuel situation. She sank 70 years ago. That's been 70 years ago. With 3 million gallons of fuel, and nobody knows if that fuel's still on board or not, and that's what this test is. It's going to take about 10 days. We'll ascertain, and in the meantime, I'm sure everybody's noticed the big trailers down by the Coast Guard building, and we welcome them. There's about 100 people in town staying in our motels and eating in our restaurants, and we welcome them. And we want to thank the Coast Guard and Fish and Game for directing everybody to stay within our boundaries, and we're very grateful for that. Announcements start with Noah.
Thank you. I would like to announce, just to start with, I put my safety helmet on, because tomorrow at the Teen Center over there on Atascadero Road by the high school, we are having a bicycle safety workshop. And it's going to be hosted by the San Luis County Bike Coalition. It's free from 5 to 7. And everything from bike riding skills to safety advice to identifying safe routes and so on. It should be a lot of fun. Definitely bring your bike if you have one, or just come and watch the fun. And wear your helmet, of course, and come on out. So it's tomorrow. That's Wednesday. And at the Teen Center over there by the high school. We had our second phase of the sign ordinance workshop the other night, or actually the other morning, and that went pretty well, good turnout again, and what was discussed was the opportunity for some of the suggestions that were incorporated into that ordinance, or the draft ordinance, to give people a chance to comment further on those suggestions. And our department, our planning department, said that that would be made available online, and they're in the process of working with the Chamber of Commerce to get that up online so people would have the chance to have further input as it goes forward. And you can expect to get an announcement from either the Chamber of Commerce, if you're a member, or by going to the city website in the next week or so to access the draft and some of the suggestions and so on of the sign ordinance. So keep an eye out for that if that's interesting to you. We have our PWAB meeting coming up, the Public Works Advisory Board, on October 20th. I neglected to confirm this with Mr. Livick, but at this point, tentatively, the bike plan will be coming to that meeting. And is there a chance that we'll have the second round of conversation for the transit, regional transit plan, also on the October 20th agenda?
I don't believe so. We haven't received any additional information from SLOCOG staff at this point yet. Okay. So,
thanks for confirming that. So October 20th here at the Vets Hall, starting at 6 o'clock, the bike plan will be rolled out, the draft, for first round of public comments. And that's at the Public Works Advisory Board. And my last announcements regarding the Central Coast Stand-Up Paddleboarding Cup and paddle races coming up on October 22nd and 23rd. At Coleman Park there on the corner of the Embarcadero near the power plant intake station. It's 2 days of fun, starting on Saturday with Around the Rock. Running up, there's races for all skill levels or just coming out. Again, that's October 22nd and 23rd. And there's a website, which is www.centralcoastsup.com. And all the proceeds are going to go to the Junior Lifeguard Program of Morro Bay, so that's exciting. And the Junior Guards also are going to be having a rummage sale during the events, both days, where mostly surf and water gear is going to be available. If you have extra surf and water gear, they're putting a call out to bring it on down, and they'll sell it as part of a donation and fundraising for their Junior Guard program. And it should be really a great time to get outfitted if you're looking for some water gear to come on down and pick it up. And that's going to be set up basically at Coleman Park. But you could bring the materials to the community center if you're going to drop things off early. So thank you for that.
Just one sort of announcement. Several of us from Morro Bay helped in the celebration last evening of the centennial of the women's right to vote in California 100 years ago yesterday, exactly. And in the process, the Lovely Park also found out that San Luis Obispo was the only county in the whole state of California that came together and did a big celebration. So that's very exciting.
And just for statistics, Morro Bay's had the most elected women in the county. The Savor event, we talked about the Harbor Festival a little bit, but the Savor event over in Santa Margarita was the first weekend in October also, and attended that. Morro Bay had a phenomenal booth set up there, and there was a great attendance and beautiful event, and a lot of outreach there. This Thursday is Eco Rotary at 5:30, and the location has been moved to Dorn's Restaurant in the back room there. So anybody who's interested in coming to an Eco Rotary meeting, that's where we'll be meeting from now on. And this Friday is Morro Bay High School homecoming football game, so hopefully everybody can get out and go root the Pirates on.
Thank you all. Council did, in accordance with the Brown Act, Council did meet in closed session before this meeting to discuss evaluations regarding the city manager and city attorney. And there's nothing to report on that. We did not finish our work. At the conclusion of this meeting, we're going to adjourn back to closed session, go back to City Hall, and resume those discussions. Public comment period. If any of you would like to address Council, this is the appropriate time. Step right up to the microphone. Good evening. You are burdened.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. My name is Todd Gailey, engineer paramedic for City Morro Bay Fire Department. Proud father of two, and I'm also the president of the Morro Bay Firefighters Association. I'm here tonight to announce an upcoming fundraiser. It's called the Rescue Challenge 2011. This is our fifth annual event. This is a fitness competition between the firefighters and the Coast Guard Station Morro Bay. It's a really fun event for us, and it's a fundraiser. The whole purpose is just to raise funds for the Morro Bay Community Foundation. So we ask for everyone's support in a couple of ways. First of all, we had local businesses help us in sponsoring our t-shirts. So we're selling t-shirts for $15, which I'm sporting now. And we also have a number of other local businesses that have donated a number of raffle prizes. So we're selling raffle tickets, $5 each, or 5 tickets for $20 for you bargain shoppers. And so our competition is coming up on the 29th. Saturday, 10 a.m. It'll be down at Coleman Beach. If you're going to be around that weekend, come on down. We usually have 100 to 200 people come check it out. It's really fun. It's a good time. The firefighters and Coast Guard personnel, we do a series of fitness events, some more serious than others. We're doing pull-ups, push-ups. We're dragging hose. We're dragging tires. We're also running down the beach getting dizzy, tripping each other, falling in the water. It's a really good time. But it's just one of the ways that we can reach out and help our community. And for those of you who don't know a whole lot about the Morro Bay Community Foundation, their whole purpose is to provide scholarships for all local children, Los Osos, Morro Bay, and Cayucas kids, to participate in any Morro Bay Parks and Rec program. So any of the sports leagues, the summer camps, junior lifeguards, dance classes, they provide up to a 40% scholarship to needy families, those that qualify. And it's just a really good thing.
Good evening, Mr. Knuckles.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. And my name is Steve Knuckles. I'm one of your fire captain paramedics. And I want to talk to you about an exciting event that's occurring in this county on Thursday during Fire Prevention Week. Your firefighters and firefighters throughout the whole county is doing a burn relay. And we're going to be starting at San Miguel and also Napomo, having two series of engines traveling. And we're going to meet in San Luis Obispo at Farmers Market. We're going to be stopping at schools in all the communities and here in Estero Bay also. We're going to give a fire prevention message to 6,126 children with three objectives. One is to hopefully prevent burns and accidents and deaths caused by fire. Two, talk about the burn services that the Louisiana Rouge Burn Foundation gives. There's a lot of people out there are burn survivors, and we need to give them help. With the corporation, with KSPY, with PSA, public service announcements, we want to get the word out and talk about the services this Burn Foundation does. In addition, we also want to raise money to send kids to Champ Camp. It's a Burn Foundation flagship service that we give to kids, burn survivor kids, from the ages 5 to 19. The Burn Foundation was started 40 years ago from a simple backyard accident that caused the death of an 8-year-old girl. Today, we serve 11 burn centers throughout California. We have multiple activities such as Champ Camp, a youth summit we have here outside of Cambria. We have an adult camp also, but also we support the families while the children are in the hospitals. We all know, all of us in this room have handicaps, but a burn-surviving child has to show their handicap every day. So the Burn Foundation's goal is to build the self-confidence of these burn survivors so they can grow up to nice, productive lives. And I personally have seen it, and it's a worthwhile Burn Foundation. So we're going to be stopping at four schools here in Estero Bay. We're going to be stopping at Del Mar Elementary at 12:50. We're going to have about seven engines from the county, probably about 30 firefighters. We're going to give a burn prevention message. And on the North Relay, we're going to have Richard Gerhardt from KSBY helping us out. We're going to be at Cayucas Elementary at 1:30. And then we're going to return back to the Montessori School at the Morro Bay Elementary School site at 2:10. Now, the South Relay, we're going to have Karina Corral, it's going to help them out, and they're going to end their relay at Monarch Grove in Los Osos. So I invite all of you, come on down, help us spend some time with kids. Nothing's funner than hanging out with kids, giving a burn prevention message, and give support for the Louisiana Rouge Burn Foundation. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for your message. Anyone else like to speak? No? Okay, thank you. I'll bring it back to council. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Steve, for coming tonight and sharing your messages. And we're at the consent calendar. Does anyone want to pull any item? I'm looking at you, Carla, Nancy. No? Could I hear a motion approving the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. We'll skip down to D1. Mr. Woods.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. The rental properties over on Shasta Street include 975, 985, and 983. The city did have three other properties on Shasta Street, but we removed those in a way to put the public services building in where it is now. So the remaining three rental properties on Shasta are on the corner. The properties were originally purchased for the development of government services. The concept was to combine the police and fire in one location on Shasta Street and move a civic center up on Harbor Street where the fire station is now. And in the interim, given that plan, those properties were rented out to generate some income. Since the Shasta Street properties have been rented out, we've spent approximately $7,000 a year on maintenance and upkeep. And that ranges from painting the inside, pest eradication, roof and window repair, and so forth. The expenses of the properties have not only included that, but we've also had some major sewer work at that location as well. Recently, 983 and 985 have become vacant, and which has allowed us to do a little bit more in-depth review of the building and its systems and so forth. 975 is a little yellow house that's right next to public services, and that's been vacant for about 4 years, and that's been scheduled for demolition for those last 4 years. And there's basically blow-on asbestos ceiling. There's 9-inch black mastic tiles on the floor, so it's all hot asbestos material that needs to be removed or abated before the building can come down. And we haven't had that money in the past, but we have had that allocation from you all recently. That property is estimated at $13,000 for demolition. 985 Shasta is the construction. We were estimating somewhere between $100 and $110 a square, and we figured half would be a reasonable estimate to put together for this repair work, not knowing what we're going to find. And as soon as we tear into walls and so forth, there may be more things that that would add up to an additional cost for repair. The 983 Shasta, which is above, is in the same condition. A major dry rot around the windowsills. You've got a failing floor, severely failing floor in the bathroom, to the point where it is hazardous to the tenants either above or in that particular unit. Plumbing has been failing. The heater has been failing. We've got staircases that need to be worked over. And that subfloor is estimated about 80% damage that would need to be tore up, pulled up, looked at, and replaced, and then built from there. The total estimates on the cost that we have to include the hazardous material, and I have identified just briefly as I walked through the 9x9 mastic tiles, the blow-on ceilings, and so forth, typical asbestos-containing material. We estimated a little over $102,000 on the repair. Recently, in this last fiscal year, 2010-11, Council, you've included $50,500 in your new deferred maintenance program to address the deferred maintenance in these rental properties, as well as the demolition of 975 Shasta. If we were to do the renovation, we would look for another $64,000 from another source to complete the above-mentioned repairs. The revenues for these properties is a little over $11,000 a year. And through the inspection of these three properties and the failing systems that we've identified, staff is definitely recommending to Council that we remove all three buildings from this site at this time. And what is basically spurred us on is that when the two, 985 and 83, became vacant, we were able to get in there a little bit more in depth. So right now you've got three vacant rental properties, one scheduled for demo and the other two for discussion tonight. Thank you.
Do you know what the demo costs are?
Yes, the demolition for 975 is about $13,000. We're estimating the 985-83 property at about $25,000. And we're hoping that some things would, if we were to choose the demolition, that we could offer these two properties, actually all three, to police and fire. In the past, when we've demoed properties, they've come in and done extensive training. We did it when we burned the old fire station. We did it on the three rental properties that were on Shasta Street. The fire guys love to come in and train some of their new folks that have never had fire training in a real house, and they're actually cutting holes in the ceiling and doing the techniques and the skills that they've been learning throughout their career. So it's real practical training for them. They generally invite a lot of outside agencies to come in and get involved in that. And police have shown an interest in doing some drills within the property as well.
Thank you, Joe. Sure. Questions for Joe? No?
Yeah, thank you. It's actually a follow-up to that question. I recall last time there was the burn and the training opportunity that some in the neighborhood were concerned about air quality, and there were some impacts to the neighbors, and particularly with these properties. you could see the adjacent private properties, the residents there, having some real strong concerns about the potential impacts they would incur during the deconstruction, and then also if there was any training there. Do you have any thoughts about how we could make sure that they weren't impacted? You know, we limited the negative impacts to those neighbors?
Yes, I could, and it's a good question. Basically, if we're going to burn a property or a building, we have to get an APC license to do that, and we've got to come in and abate all the hazardous material prior to that happening. Now, I would defer to Chief Pond regarding the burning of those properties and what his intent might be.
Evening. It's highly unlikely that we would burn these properties. It's more likely that we would do forcible entry training, ventilation training, cutting holes in the roof and breaching walls, and forcible entry through doors, searches. We may use some non-toxic smoke material that we do use to impair vision inside a building like that. But due to the proximity to some of the other structures there, it's highly unlikely that we would burn these. We can take a look at it and evaluate it further, but just a first walkthrough and walk around, we weren't really looking in that direction for burning.
Okay, thank you. And along the lines of the avocado there in the front, that's got a pretty good buffer distance from the existing structures. Would you anticipate that we
coming around? I don't have any immediate plans to put anything or offer any development on that property. There's been some talk about a community garden going into that location. We would want to make sure that we leave the site prepared for anything that might come out sequentially out of the development. So we would definitely be willing to look at anything or any ideas that come up. I thought the gardening was a good idea that's come up. We would probably want to do retain some fencing between the rental property on Dune Street and this property. So we would there's a little bit of work still left to do after we demo the buildings, if that's what we want to do tonight.
So is there enough in the allocated funds for maintenance that would cover that part?
Yes, definitely. Right now we have a little over $50,000 that's dedicated to those properties through the deferred maintenance account, and we're estimating the demolition to just under $40,000. So we would have a little bit of change to work with if we were to put up a fence and do something that would improve the next usage.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad we have the opportunity to have allocated some money for removing, if that's the decision made, but the properties there, so that we don't have to continue leaving them there in disrepair, if that's the direction we choose. I would hope that one of the I like the idea potentially of in the future maybe using it for a community garden or something while we evaluate other options, and I'm hopeful that we might revisit the master plan for that location of the city's civic center there and what potentially we could do with putting all our departments together again. That's always was, I think, the goal of having that property and that everything in one area. So I would be hopeful we'd look at that again. And would also hope that we would be looking at local contractors to do the demolition. Thank you.
Anything else? Go ahead, Mo.
Actually, one question regarding the utilities, because I did hear that you've done some work recently on the sewer line and so on. Do you see the possibility of any sections of viable utility line being able to keep that in place and perhaps adapting that for a future use, or would you anticipate just complete renovation and renewed fresh new lines?
I think you're looking at fresh new lines. Some of that, basically the sewer lines failed and collapsed through the back of the property. We have a small sewer tree to the front that connects both buildings out the front. So that could remain intact, but for the most part, if you're going to develop that property, I think you'd want to start fresh with new utilities, both underground and above.
Okay. And with the concept of a pocket park, community garden for the short term, would there be the opportunity to have a stub up for at least a hose bib or something like that?
I would hope that we would include that in our planning.
Okay. And then you mentioned the fence, and of course that corner being fairly visible. Have you thought about whatever happens there in the short term and into the future, depending on how soon the concept comes forward and we're able to fund it, how to avoid the blight situation where we have what looks like a halfway begun or finished construction project that sits and really creates a corner that doesn't look good?
I'll let you know, if we decide to demo those buildings, we're going to leave the lot as clean as possible. And the fencing, what I'm anticipating, wouldn't be in the front by the road. It'd be in the back next to the adjacent property. So it's an L in the back side of the property, not in the front side of the property. And blight is something that we would not want to facilitate. So we would want to make sure that we leave it very clean and remove all the concrete and get it ready for the next use.
I guess that's where the concept of the Pocket Park Community Garden would help also soften that corner.
Certainly would.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? Anything else? Somebody to make the motion? I'll move that we direct staff to demolish 975, 985, and 983 Shasta Avenues, and that the demolition leaves the ground ready for a pocket park or community garden or something along those lines, and that staff includes a hose bib on the property upon completion.
No second.
Discussion, Noah?
It doesn't sound like we need to talk about the avocado. That was pretty pretty cut and dry. I will vote in favor of this. It's somewhat
in my motion to give a timeline to this. How long would you want to complete this work?
We have a consultant ready to come in and identify all the hazardous material to be abated. So once we get that report, we'll be able to line up a contractor to abate and demo. Most likely we could get this done within the next 2 months easily. We are leaving out the training, so we could get the demo done in a couple of months. We've got a schedule. Thanks, Mike. There's training for police and fire that may prolong.
Oh, you
that
excited
timeline
over there? Yeah, I'm good with 6 months. Can we save to bring this project to a conclusion within 6 months? Everybody cool with that?
I think we're okay with that.
Just
sure,
so it doesn't go on forever, can you amend your second to include that? So we've included that, Bridget. And then I'll ask for the
6 months or shorter.
Or less.
Yeah,
but
less.
Did you have something, Andrea? By any chance?
Thank you, Mayor Yates. I do have one question. When we talk about bringing it to conclusion, is that ground ready for the next phase, but not the community garden completely established by that point?
Yeah, established, and we want like 4 feet
trees
in the air. Yeah.
Three avocados.
Big trees, yeah, a grove.
Thanks.
Yes, ready to go.
Okay.
Ready to go for future use. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. D2, Mr. Livick.
Dylan Wade is here to present that item on the toilet retrofit program.
Good evening, and thank you, Council. I'll keep this brief. Really, this is brought to you tonight as a discussion. A little bit of background. Part of the Urban Water Management Planning Act in the state of California has some specific demand management measures, or BMPs, best management practices that we have to address as a city in order to basically be deemed in compliance. That compliance is important to us. It enables us to receive funds from state and federal agencies. For example, the most significant one that comes to mind is the SRF loan that we're anticipating on the wastewater treatment plant. So we really want to make sure that as we move through the process, you can either be in compliance by having a mature program and implementing a program, or by showing that it's not locally cost effective. So one of those 14 BMPs then is the toilet retrofit rebate program. They actually split it into residential and commercial. We haven't made that distinction here in the city of Morro Bay. But looking back on our historic water use, we've seen significant declines over time. So in the 70s, our water use in 1970 was 193 gallons per person per day. Last year, our water use was 106. So we've seen significant, of course, the weather helped us last year, but that's a significant reduction in terms of actually how much water we're using. So tonight I brought forward to you is basically a discussion. In July of this last year, the plumbing code was modified so that all toilets sold in California now have to meet a standard of 1.28 gallons per flush or less. Historically, we've been funding a program to replace toilets at a standard that was 1.6 gallons per flush or less, and that was implemented in the 90s. Historically, toilets use somewhere between 3 to 4 gallons per flush, kind of the 1960s version of toilet. So we've documented in Morro Bay a fairly significant and over an 80% replacement rate. So we think that we've gone through and kind of done the first sweep and that most of the 3-gallon per flush toilets have been retrofitted. And we've seen that in terms of our wastewater concentrations have come up, our water use has dropped. So we think we've been fairly successful in the program. And then the question, the discussion for you tonight is, in light of the fact that the plumbing code has changed, do we want to continue with the program? Do we want to subsidize replacing toilets all the way down to 1.28? So would we say that it was, we'll pay for a change from a 3 to a 1.28? Do we want to pay for the change from a 1.6 down to a 1.28? And so I've outlined kind of a couple of options here. My recommendation as staff is probably the first one I think is going to be our best bet, which is to keep the current program as it exists and is interpreted. And what that would do is we would pay for conversion of toilets that are basically, if you have one that's out there that's 3 or more and you're converting it down to a 1.28 or a 1.6, then we would subsidize that. But I don't recommend that we pay to subsidize the swap between a 1.6 and 1.28. You just don't realize enough water savings that it would be cost effective for us. And then also from a global resource standpoint, I can't see sort of replacing all the new toilets in Morro Bay with more new toilets. I don't have any stock in Kohler or American Standard. So with that, I'll end my presentation and just sort of leave it to the council's will and direction and then answer any sort of questions or concerns you might have.
Is less than $40 and can be used to adapt any toilet to a dual flush model. And I've heard it discussed through the some of the different efficiency, water efficiency partners that we have. Are you familiar with that option? And is that something that we could explore? And then also a question regarding the water efficiency kits that I believe we have paid for through the EVC. Is there any relation with those into this as well?
Yeah, that's two good questions. If we were going to pursue sort of the toilet retrofit program, kind of initial thoughts, I won't claim any specific expertise at toilet retrofitting. But if we were going to pursue that, I would recommend that we look into it a little bit. I would have some initial concerns. The design of a toilet, there actually is some thought and kind of process that goes into that. So I'm not sure that you could just sort of universally retrofit and then it would be a successful operation. And so that would be my sort of primary concern. I would want to research it and bring that back if that was the direction of council. In terms of your second question, the plumbing retrofit kits, we did not include toilet bags. So back in the day, that was common to include a bladder or an inflatable thing that you could put in the back of your toilet. With these newer lower flush toilets, that's not a good idea. They won't function. Because we've ratcheted down the water use so much, if you put a toilet bag in there and you cut out a gallon of the 1.28, it won't function as intended. So those really are sort of getting gleaned out of water retrofit kits. And I don't believe that we included those in ours, and that would be the only relation that I would see. The rest of it was faucet aerators and some other things like that.
Okay. So that's the last of my questions.
What is the cost of continuing with the current plan, number one?
Currently, the budget that we have for water conservation, I have a line item that's about $10,000. We use about $1,400 of that for, we're actually launching a gardening website, so a low water use gardening website in conjunction with other agencies in the county. So currently our retrofit program is kind of as they come in, but it's fairly minimal. My guess is maybe $3,000 a year of the $10,000 we allocate for rebate programs.
And you say that there are just a few remaining fixtures out there that need to be changed. Could you kind of clarify a little bit, few?
Sure. I mean, I haven't gone and kind of knocked on doors and asked to use people's toilets to count, but we've documented that there's over an 80%. So over 80% of the people or the residences or addresses in Morro Bay have received the rebate and have a lower flush toilet. I would anticipate, though, anytime you run a rebate program, I don't think you'll see 100%. Because some people don't care about the rebate, or for example, the place I live was built subsequent to the rebate program, so they wouldn't be eligible for a rebate. It was built with a low flush toilet, so it's just a guess, really. My guess is there's maybe 500 or less toilets out there that haven't been retrofitted in Morro Bay, but that's just an off the cuff guess.
So I guess my final question is, would continuing with option number one, whether or not we go to the lower flush, meet the requirements that we need to get grants and things?
I believe so. It's really sort of unclear, and there hasn't been any published guidance from DWR on how they're going to interpret the requirements in the coming years. But I think it's a risk I'd be fairly comfortable taking. So I think that our program, if we left it just like it is, we're going to see every year we're giving less and less rebates. You're just sort of falling off the curve there. What we're not doing is incentivizing sort of a jump to a lower model in that. So it really becomes a question of sort of values. The water savings on any of these decisions aren't going to be consequential. In terms of our total demand, probably not even measurable.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I see some value in continuing the program as part of a portfolio of our urban water management plan, and I think it'll help us satisfy those requirements, and particularly the dual flush. I think it's a modest shift. The price shouldn't be that much difference, but ultimately it helps pave the way for other projects to notice and recognize the dual flush option, and hopefully more people take advantage of that opportunity to cut back on their water use. And that's clearly the direction in the industry. So my suggestion is we go with option one as recommended, and we adjust to include the dual flush as the toilet.
He's on a roll tonight. He's on a roll tonight. That's two.
Okay, discussion. I'll
discussion,
start
yes.
down to you, Carl.
Thank you. I guess my question then was for just clarification. You are not going to recognize the 1.28, or you're going to recognize the 1.26 and the dual flush?
No, I would
just
like
the
to.
Dual flush.
Just the dual flush. If the person would like to take advantage of the program,
from
that,
three,
that is their option.
From three down to dual flush only, not from three down to.
Exactly.
Why would you not do either or?
Because dual flush is becoming the standard in the industry, and prices, as far as I understand, aren't much different. So why not encourage, if we are going to give a rebate, why not encourage the highest standard that's available in the industry, then go with your conventional standard that really is, does that even justify a rebate any longer?
I don't think 1.2628 is a conventional standard when you're going from a 3 all the way down.
It's the minimum of the code at this point.
And
so
they don't get any lower than that other than the, ultimate conservation. I just feel like you're missing recognizing an opportunity for that little bit of segment that isn't really that important to not include.
Yeah.
It's getting a pretty fine line for something we're doing that's going to be minimally used.
Yeah, and that's why I think if someone's going to use it, let's help them get all the way to the gold standard rather than your basic package at this point.
I wish you would have told me before I just put a new toilet in.
Well, you're doing pretty good, and I think that's the point, is let's help them get to that. Let's help bring this new standard to a point where everyone recognizes that as an option, because it's not seen as an option by many people at this point because they just aren't aware of it.
It's interesting that you phrase it that way, help them, and what I'm hearing is legislate.
Well, this is a program that's optional. By choice, you can say, I would like to take this rebate, and therefore, let's hold them to that higher standard.
Yeah, okay. Back to you.
No, I don't agree, but I'll vote for it just because I'm supportive of the program, but I don't agree taking it to that level.
I'm fine.
You good?
I'm fine.
I'm not crazy about it, but I'm not going to vote against it. So let's vote.
All you can flush twice with the dual flush if you really need to.
There you go. I can be orange.
Mellows, yellow, you know.
Brian flush it down. Right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries 5-0-D3. I don't see Janine. Rob.
Yes, Ms. Burlingame was not available to attend tonight's meeting. I'll take this item. Which is a status report on refuse collection or solid waste collection at the Moore Rock parking lot. Currently, there are 16 trash cans at the Moore Rock parking lot. In the summertime, they're collected 6 days a week. In the wintertime, they're collected by Moore Bay Garbage 3 days a week. We also have a dumpster that is used by our staff to put garbage in. And we have a couple of restart cycling containers out there. There used to be 7-day-a-week service for garbage. It was discontinued about 10 years ago. There was not enough interest in town to continue that because it was very expensive. We're paying double time to the garbage company for that that collection. Which is about $200 an hour at today's rate. So if we were to do Sunday service, you know, half the year, it might add up to around $5,000 for that garbage service, to add that Sunday service. Currently, also, Recreation and Harbor staff do assist with garbage collection by emptying the cans on that Sunday when they're available to do that. And Morro Bay Beautiful does help do litter pickup around the Rock parking lot. I think there's no really staff recommendation here, but from my point of view, $5,000 is an awful lot to spend for a couple days a year where we have overfull trash cans, and there might be a better way to do that by having perhaps a second round of city staff go and check those and empty those cans on the weekends or holidays. That really wasn't part of the report, but I think that's something that we should do and explore, and would do that as staff and perhaps don't require the direction from council to take that step. That concludes my report.
Or just people that like to go down there and watch the ocean and the birds and so on. It sounds like it's a problem at times throughout the week, and there's a fair number of citizens that help. Like, as you pointed out, Morro Bay Beautiful's down there. Other concerned citizens walk through there consistently and help pick up, but my concern is that we go forward thinking it's just the weekend when the problem can be intense at other times when it's not just your large three-day weekend or so on. So I'd like us to monitor that situation more. And one of the primary problems that I'm hearing and seeing is that some of the trash cans down there have recently been replaced to a style that's not that birds particularly are not able to get into. But the majority of them are still the old style that is really easy for a bird to fly up to, perch on, and pretty much pull things out even when it's not overflowing. So I think that's another problem and challenge that we need to address down there besides just the emptying of the existing cans. So I've heard some different ideas about what we could do, whether that's continuing the replacement of the older cans with the newer model or looking at something like the Big Belly that would also keep the birds from emptying the trash cans and so on. So I'm open to what the best ideas will be within our budget to resolve those problems. But those are the two areas that I think
I'd like to see addressed with our action tonight and then going forward.
I won't speak for the other departments, but let me try to. I think with our existing staff, staffing levels, we can keep maybe a closer eye on the trash levels and, you know, address them as they come up rather than letting them become an issue on that holiday weekend. I think we can do a better job of that as staff. I also think, like them or not, we have our new trash signs out there on the beach that we've had out there for along the Harbor Walk, and that basically let people know, you know, to use the trash cans and recycling containers, because it can be a problem with, you know, marine life, just throwing, you know, not using the proper containers. And, you know, that's been reported to us also, that, you know, some people will just open their door and the trash can's too far away to use, so it'll just end up on the in the parking lot there. So, you know, a little bit of public education and a little bit of additional staff time, I think, will help out a lot there.
Yeah, and then along the lines of the container issue and accessibility to birds and so on, do you have any thoughts?
We'll work with Morro Bay Garbage to see what we can get out there to replace the lids on those, and if anybody, the other departments, have input on the bird proofing of trash cans, I'd like to hear that.
I've got a little bit for you, Rob. We've tried to retrofit the top. It's those aggregates, Henson 130 aggregates, are about 27 by 27 on the top, and to get a top that fits that, that's bird proof, we haven't really found it yet. We're looking at one that has a little flap on the top that you can dump it in, and then it springs closed. That was one of our options. We tried to pilot test that out the rock. It didn't really hold up to the weather or the beating that it took with visitors. So we were back to just replacing the receptacle itself, and those receptacles were picked out by the Harbor Department that put those in. And those aggregates are roughly $500-$600 a piece, and they're expensive to transport. So we're very cautious, but when we put the order in, we usually couple up with other cities that are in St. Louis has these type, so is San Francisco. But the retrofitting the top, we have not been successful at.
Well, I want to see that resolved. I don't know if we want to let this continue and staff to investigate some of these options further. It sounds like the additional attention on the weekends from staff is going to help us there, but as far as the renovation or retrofitting bird proofing of the existing cans, do you think we need to provide more clear direction? I'd like to make sure that it's addressed is the main issue. I don't necessarily feel like we have to be all over this. It's just a matter of is it going to get done or not.
I agree. Let me just hear from the others, and we will make sure that we go in that direction. George, do you have anything?
Well, I kind of talked to a kind of fellow out there, and those big bellies, they cost a lot of money, right? And I wonder if they would hold up out there either with all that weather and stuff. They are metal. There is a real problem with the birds, there's no doubt about it. And those ones that are sitting out there now kind of like look like and make it look like ugly Easter Island or something. It just seems like there's something out there that would look good. And I know it's hard to make a garbage can look good.
That Monday morning crew for years and years. And I can tell you, that parking lot does not get cleaned regularly anymore. Used to be when Chuck Meissner was alive, it was a lot more organized. But the whole structure of Morro Bay Beautiful is in question right now. And I know there are volunteers who will go out there occasionally and clean it up. But they're getting older. There are all kinds of reasons it's not done every Monday morning. And I think relying on them to do it kind of shirks our duty in making sure that it's done. I would certainly always encourage any citizen who sees trash out there to pick it up and put it in a trash can. I just think that's a part of maintaining our city. Yet I think we really need until we can get new cans, especially, and probably even after, we need to really look at our maintenance staffs to check it regularly. Just drive by and see what's out there and pick it up if it's bad. Thank you.
I won't keep beating the poor birds up, so I'll just support the comments made by the other council members and would leave it to staff to improve the pickup and work towards roof-proofing the trash cans as money was allowed.
I would suggest the same thing, Noah, and we could put a time on this, 3-4 months, bring it back. Let's get an update. You know, let's do the research on the bird proof. There's got to be something out there, but I don't know that for a fact. Anything you want to add? But I'm not trying to dictate your desires on this.
That sounds good to me. And I would suggest that we should be open to a funding need and scenario to be proposed when that does come back because of the profile. This is one of the highest profile places, perhaps the highest in our community, and if we can't find some funds to handle a very serious problem out there, then I think we're missing the mark on our job, and so I think we should not close the door to identifying funds if that's necessary to resolve the problem.
Open with me.
Okay, great.
Well, I can't add it, but I'd love to add grading out there, what we used to do. We don't grade at all out there anymore, right? Do we?
About once a year.
Once a year. Yeah. Okay. So are you okay with, do you want to make a motion on this, or are we good with just having a consensus? 4 months? November, December, January, February, March 1st, we'll call it. That's 4.5 months. Is that good? Everybody agree with this?
Just a question for the staff attention out there. That's something, obviously, that could start now.
Tomorrow. 8 o'clock.
As necessary.
Okay, so we're good. So, so I know this isn't the appropriate time, but I'm going to ask Andrea to put that on the tracking or Bridget to put that on the tracking sheet. First meeting in March, we'll have a report back. Cool. B1. Susan.
Good evening, Mayor Yates and council members. The item before you is the introduction and first reading of Ordinance 574, which establishes the second-tier retirement formula for the PERS miscellaneous group at 2% at 60, 3-year final compensation. This formula will apply to all new hires for the miscellaneous group. All new hires will be paying 100% of the employee contribution. The new employer rate is 7.73%, 14% lower than the rate paid for existing employees. We currently have 5 positions waiting to be filled under this tier. And that concludes my report. Mayor Yates.
Well, that was a fabulous report. Carla? Nancy? Anything on this side? This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us on this item, this is the appropriate time. Any of you? Okay, I'll close it and bring it back to council, and I would entertain a motion to approve item B1 by reading by title and number only.
Second.
So moved.
You made the motion.
You would entertain a motion.
I did say entertain.
Oh, yes.
But we got it backwards. So we got a second on the entertain, and then the motion made. We'll call it. Nancy gets the motion. Carla gets the second. Yeah, I mean, it's almost 7:30.
And we get the vote. Do we get the vote?
Are you okay with this motion, Bridget? By title and number only. Are we okay? Okay. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carries 5-0. Ms. Luker.
This is Ordinance Number 574, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay authorizing an amendment to the contract between the City Council of the City of Morro Bay and the Board of Administration of the California.
That's it. Okay, then we will adjourn to closed session, and we'll meet at City Hall at 7:35. Thank you, staff.
That's the number one thing I always do. Shows I'm tired. I didn't bring the phone. See.
Tomorrow.
Oh.
That's like, what's new?
They ain't out there.